But soft, what light through yonder podcast breaks? Hey, drama listeners, it is Dylan here with a quick message before you hear our fabulous episode with Gabby Beans, who is a Tony nominee and is currently starring in Romeo and Juliet, that hot new revival that's currently on Broadway, only running through February. We get into all of it, all things Mercutio, all things The Friar. It is so much fun, and you are going to absolutely love Gabby. I'm sure you're already mesmerized by her work. It's that giving time of year. And if you feel like giving and supporting a small business, aka drama, with Connor and Dylan McDowell, please feel free to check out our Patreon. It's linked in the notes below, or you could go on patreon.com/thedramapodcast, where you'll get at least two bonus episodes a month with Connor and I, as well as be added to our Instagram close friends, where we spill all the fun little tea and secrets and just giggle every now and then. Speaking of the season of gratitude, Connor and I are so grateful for everyone who listens, who lets us know that they listen, who leaves nice ratings and reviews. We hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving and holiday season ahead, and we are so excited to continue to bring you even more drama. All right, let's get on with the show.
Press play.
Curtain of an hour in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey. Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. Connor, I'm so excited. The holiday season is upon us. One of my favorite aspects of this time of year is all of the new movies that come out.
I know. It is so thrilling. Although I will say, I feel like we had great movies throughout the year. I mean, Challengers back in April, I'm still obsessed with, obviously. Yeah. We also had Dune Part 2 earlier this year.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm just saying, like, whenever Zendaya does something, I'm obsessed with it. But and then over the summer, I feel like there were good ones, too. But I know. What have you seen recently that you loved or just thought was interesting?
Okay, well, other than Wicked, which I know we've talked about and we'll talk about more, but there are two movies that I saw, I would say, like, end of October, early November, that I can't believe we haven't mentioned on the podcast yet, but Conclave, which I know you saw that as well.
Obsessed.
It was so good.
I feel like it's like this, it's building this groundswell of crowd support over the weeks and on social media. It's so good. Someone described it as if an episode of Gossip Girl takes place in the Vatican. And that is totally what it is.
It is.
So good.
I know. I loved it so much. And it felt like a play. It really reminded me of theater.
For sure.
And then the other movie that, I mean, I loved so much, and I don't know if I could ever watch it again, but it's one of those things that I felt to be a masterpiece, was Anora.
Oh my God. I know that opening shot with that Take That song, and she's giving the lap dance and the glitter in her hair and the credits. Oh my God. It was so lit. She's amazing. Mikey Madison.
Yes. Which, how do we know her? Like, where has she come from?
Well, she was in Scream 5.
Okay. Throwing out Scream and then like a number attached to it. I'm like, okay, yes. Could be any of them. Yeah.
Well, that's the one that they came out with that introduced Melissa Barrera and Jenna
Ortega.
Yeah.
And okay.
That, so like when they revamped the franchise, but Mikey Madison was in that. But Dylan, I'm obsessed with her. I feel like a star is born with her and
totally.
Anora. That accent she does.
Oh, it's everything.
A gag. I hope, not that awards like matter that much with like making film stars or whatever, but I hope that she gets nominated for everything because she deserves it.
Everything.
She's an it girl.
Yeah. And you know, we have an it girl with us today, if I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah.
We do.
Someone who burst onto the scene and was just collecting accolades and recognitions left and right. And I'm so excited, you know, in doing research for this guest, I was like, wait, every single role has been iconic.
I know. And again, burst onto the scene and now stays booked.
Stays booked. Bring her in because I want to talk to her all about it, especially because she's in, I mean, probably one of our favorite shows that has come out this season.
So nice. I saw it twice.
I know. Oh, so jealous.
All right. Here we go. Our guest today currently stars in Romeo and Juliet on Broadway, playing the iconic roles of Mercutio and the Friar. She's a 2022 Tony Award nominee for her Broadway debut performance in The Skin of Our Teeth, for which she received a Distinguished Performance nod from the Drama League. Off-Broadway credits include I'm Revolting and Anatomy of a Suicide at the Atlantic Theater Company, Mary's Sequel, LCT3/Lincoln Center Theater, and Jonah at Roundabout Theater Company, for which she received a Lucille Lortel Award and a Distinguished Performance nomination.
You'll recall this star's recent TV appearances, such as the recurring role of Maya on Apple TV Plus's Presumed Innocent, opposite Jake Gyll, HBO's Succession, CBS's The Good Fight, and Showtime's Ray Donovan. As a filmmaker, our guest has written, produced, and starred in two award-winning narrative shorts that have screened at both international and domestic film festivals. She's an army brat, famously uses both sides of her brain, which we'll get into, and is truly extraordinary in everything she does. Please welcome to Drama, Gabby Beans.
Oh my goodness, that was the most lovely introduction I have ever received as a person in my life ever. Also, the fact that you said Jake Gyll is sending me. Jake Gyll, as we call him, you know.
Felt right.
As his friends call him.
Oh, well, that's us, obviously.
Oh my God.
Jake Gyll.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's so awesome to be here.
Oh my God, the pleasure is truly ours, Gabby. First of all, you have an iconic name as well.
Thank you so much. I mean, it really sucked up until around like fifth grade because of the fart jokes.
Yeah.
You know, the magical fruit. It was just low hanging fruit that children cannot avoid picking up. But once a maturity set in a little bit, then it kind of grew on me.
So this is your government name.
My dad is Lieutenant Colonel Beans. My mother is still Mrs. Beans, but was practicing medicine and was Dr. Beans. So it's like, I live in a cartoon.
Oh, it's amazing. It's what a magical world to live in.
I remember, we'll get into it in a second, but I remember the first time I had heard of you was during the 2022 theater season, 2021-22, when you were in Skin of Our Teeth. And Twitter, which I know is like dying out now, we don't really use it, but everyone was just tweeting about Gabby Beans, Gabby Beans, Gabby Beans needs a Tony nom, Gabby Beans, Gabby. And then you got it. And I was like, I'm gagging for Gabby Beans. And I haven't even seen this play yet. Like, what's going on? Anyway, so we're so thrilled to have you here. We'd like to check in with all of our guests before we get into the meat and potatoes of the conversation. Gabby, are you well?
I would say that in the immortal words of Snoop Dogg, if you're breathing, you're achieving. So that's where I'm at. I'm here. I'm alive. I am deeply grateful to be alive. And also just trying to take things as they come.
Got to respect that. I love a Snoop Dogg reference. Snoop Dogg, Snoop Lion, now back to Snoop Dogg, friend of Martha Stewart.
We love a transformation. We love an evolution. We love it all.
Absolutely. And you mentioned before we started recording that your voice is a little hoarse. You're sipping your tea. You do have an iconic speaking voice, by the way.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. I mean, once again, I've sounded like this more or less since I was 12. So I remember when my mom, like on pizza night on Friday, she'd be like, call Pizza Hut. And I would call Pizza Hut and be like, hey, can I get a medium pepperoni? And they'd be like, okay, sir. And I'm like, I'm a 12-year-old girl. But once again, you grow into it.
See, I got the opposite. I was always ma'am and honestly still am.
But gender is a construct, so it's fine. We learned
that. Absolutely.
I know.
Say that.
I know. It's so true. How's Romeo and Juliet going?
Speaking of gender being a construct,
yeah.
You know, it's so much fun. I feel so grateful that I get to play the roles that I'm playing. I mean, one thing I've been really lucky with in my career is that I've gotten the chance to do things that seemed so far-fetched that I didn't even have like the audacity to hope for them. So the idea of playing Mercutio and Friar Lawrence on Broadway is just a dream come true. So it's really just a dream come true. I mean, like, I went to drama school in England and our last performance, like our final showing of my program was Romeo and Juliet. And I played Lady Capulet and like, go off. I love her. She's, you know, she's amazing. But I was like, you know, it'd be really cool to get a shot at Mercutio. So then to get that shot is pretty wild.
I mean, Mercutio is one of those like legendary roles. He leaves such a mark, or they leave such a mark on the whole piece in general. I'm so curious how this even fell into your lap.
Well, I wish it had fallen, but I did have to audition several times.
But of course.
But you know, I was going to do a different job. And then the audition for this came through my inbox.
Oh, wait, can I ask, was the job another stage show?
It was another stage show, which I will not mention because that's too much drama.
Ooh.
But anyway, you know, it's always a blessing to have work on the calendar as an actor. And then this audition comes along, it would conflict with what I had already said yes to. But I was like, I have to do this. I just felt, sometimes I think you get offered stuff or you get an audition for things and you feel this like quiet, but very like unignorable need to just try. So I felt that and went in and auditioned a couple times and felt really comfortable around Sam, really enjoyed how he was steering me to look at the work and to work on the language, and was very, very, very pleased when I got the call in June that I'd get to do this.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. So when you went into audition, was it for Mercutio and the Friar, or how did that break down in that way?
Yeah. So like some of the tracks in our show with the double casting, some of those tracks evolved later in the process, but I believe that Sam always kind of knew that he wanted the same person to be playing Mercutio and the Friar. So when I received that audition, it was for both of those parts, which was part of the excitement of auditioning for it. It was like, how do you even play both these guys? Like, it's a wild thing to really even imagine and conceive of, but it's the type of challenge that I think really excites me as a performer, because I always want to feel like I'm playing at the edge of my abilities. And when something seems slightly impossible, I'm like, well, I might suck, but I also might not suck. And in the case that I don't suck, or in between, somewhere in between those two poles, I'll feel like I'm emerging a more expanded person.
Mm, I love that. I mean, you are so dynamic in this show. It's the whole concept of the production is so interesting. You know, first of all, being in the round in general, but the cast, the doubling, everything about it is so unique.
The teddy bears, the gummy bears.
Yes, yes. The bear motif.
The bear motif. Yeah, absolutely. So how much of that was already set in place when you all got into the rehearsal room, or was it sort of built as you were kind of going through it?
Well, you know, on the first day of rehearsal, you have design presentations. So we saw, I don't want to spoil anything.
Yes.
Yeah. For anyone who has not seen the show, because please come and see our show. But there is a pretty cool revelation of space that happens at some point during the show. And so we knew that that was going to happen. We kind of knew some of the larger set pieces and how some of the iconic scenes were going to be staged. But the physical and emotional and kind of like energetic world of the play was something that evolved very organically. We are helmed by Sam Gold and Sonia Taye with music from Jack Antonoff. And those three kind of jammed in the room in a way that I've never seen theater artists work. Like, they all sort of were intervening on each other's sectors. And we also have fights by Drew Leary, and everyone, it was really, it felt like a jam, you know, that people were sort of peppering in ideas and colors throughout the process. And so the piece as it exists now emerged out of that process in a way that was really cool to watch.
Oh my gosh, I can only imagine.
The revelation of the space is truly breathtaking. There are so many stunning design elements in this show, and I feel like everything just works together so beautifully. And Sam knows how to direct for the round. I mean, Fun Home, which we talked about before and we will talk about again shortly. Going back to you playing both roles, Mercutio and the Friar, I have to say one of my favorite moments in the show is when you grab the mic and you're like, I'm the Friar now. Does the audience just eat that up every time you do it?
Yeah, and I gotta be honest, like, it surprised me. Like, our first preview of this show was an experience I will never forget, because it was one of the most rambunctious, alive, joyful performances in the theater I've ever experienced. People were just clapping, yelling, screaming the whole time. It was really kind of how you would imagine Shakespeare would have wanted these plays to be received, in this really alive, conversational way. But I remember the first time I said, I'm the Friar now, people like applauded for a long time. And I was like, oh, I guess this moment is different than how I thought it would be. But I think it's just, it speaks to really Sam's point of view on how Shakespeare should be performed and how to sort of distill the essence of the piece in a way that makes it really available to people. So even though those are not words that are in Romeo and Juliet, I think that moment kind of encapsulates the irreverence and the aliveness of this interpretation of the play.
For sure.
And I think that that's so key because it really is a Romeo and Juliet for right now. And I love that it's probably bringing in young audiences who maybe have read it. Like, I know we read it our freshman year of high school. Did you have to read it in high school as well, Romeo and Juliet specifically?
Yes, yes, I did. I remember doing like passage analysis in my English class of those like speeches. Yeah.
We had a really cool project actually where we had to take a specific scene and you were put into a group and you had to put it into another scenario. So like, for example, our group took the scene and put it into the world of Fiddler on the Roof. One group took it and put it onto like rival pizza shops in our hometown, and you had to film it and then present it to the class. And this was in like 2009, so we didn't have cell phone cameras in that way. Like, we had to like really be creative and cut it together.
Yeah.
But it made it feel like such a personal experience. And like, Shakespeare is so transferable, like he keeps it going, and we still quote lines from it. Oh, yeah. Even to this day. But anyway, yeah.
It was that scene towards the end of the show when it's Juliet, the nurse, and Lord and Lady Capulet. And Lord Capulet's basically like, you need to go and get married and, you know, move on with your life. And so when it came, I got amped during the show. I was like, oh, this is that scene. Like, this is such a great moment. And it's, the show is full of so many incredible quotes. There's a reason why it's taught still to this day, you know?
And you get to say some of the great ones too. Like Queen Mab, obviously.
A plague on both your houses.
I got the chills when you said it. Oh my God. I was like, it was truly a thrilling theatrical experience. I'm gagged for it, obviously. I'm jumping out of my seat right now.
Everyone needs to go see it, basically, is what we're saying.
Oh, thank you so much, y'all. I mean, no, to your point, there are like, so one of the most thrilling parts about this job is going out to stage door and hearing almost every night, this is the first time I've ever seen a Shakespeare play. Mm. You know what I mean? And for this to be people's inaugural Shakespeare experience with such a really special and diverse and unexpected, I would say, company of players is a thrill. I mean, I remember being in high school and seeing theater, not to jump the shark, because I know we'll get into this later, but, you know, I remember having these experiences as a high schooler and that being those moments being sort of the germinal stages of my desire to be part of this art form and to then be part of other people's journey in that way is like so motivating and moving and like such a huge, huge blessing.
Oh, I'll bet. And also having Rachel Zegler and Kit Connor, who are so hot right now in general. I mean, they're both amazing, but like they're so popular. It's probably bringing in their fans who might not even have any exposure to Shakespeare in general and then are falling in love with it.
Dude, I have to tell you, I am so grateful to them. Like, one, they are both freaks of nature for many reasons. One, they are so talented. They are so successful. And so kind and normal and sweet and like easy to talk to and get along with. And, you know, they bring such a loving and hugely supportive fan base. And it means that we're not like, our show was sold really well before we opened, before we even started previews. And it's because of Kit and Rachel. So to have people that have that kind of draw, but then also are so like about the work and so easy and kind and sweet, like they were raised right. Let me just tell you that much.
Oh, that's so special. I can feel that. What is sort of like the cast dynamic of the players?
It is so much fun and so wild. I mean, what can I say? We are just constantly roasting each other. Like it just never stops. There's a lot of trust in this show because we're fighting, we're climbing up ladders, we're going to really intense emotional places. And I would say even from the beginning of rehearsal, there was a sense that there was no bad eggs, that everyone was genuinely a good person, genuinely excited about doing the work and really committed to trying to tell the story as best we could. So it's one of, if not the best, it's like one of the best companies I've ever been a part of. And I deeply care about all of them. And I'm just grateful to all of them.
Beautiful. I love that so much. Also, I have to say, I'm obsessed with the music in the show. I love when you guys are dancing.
Yeah.
It's so cute. Oh my God, I just love it. What moment are you most looking forward to performing in the play tonight?
Well, I'm always like, I'm never really satisfied, right? Like, so I'm always kind of like, especially over long runs, some parts come into focus, some things get blurry, and you're so there's this one scene where Romeo has gone to the garden and is going to meet Juliet for the first time, and he's ditched me as Mercutio and Tahin Modak as Benvolio, and we're kind of taunting him from above. And I'm excited to do that scene because I have some ideas for what I want to do this tonight.
Ooh. Oh. Okay, buying a ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, Tahin, I have such a crush. Oh my God. So cute.
Isn't he so cute?
Oh my God. I can't even. Okay. So we were teasing this a little bit earlier when we mentioned Sam Gold. We mentioned Fun Home. We mentioned you getting into the arts. We like to ask all of our guests this question. We borrow Ring of Keys from Fun Home because we want to know about that moment of recognition when you were consuming art in some way and you realized, oh my God, I love this so much. I need to be a part of it. Do you feel like you can pinpoint a Ring of Keys moment or moments that you had?
Totally. I mean, I'm one of those people that just was obsessed with attention from a young age. So I was always just doing shows and like forcing my parents to like do these intrigues with my dolls and stuff like that. But that was just, you know, attention seeking. And then when it sort of got channeled into a more artistic lane, I'd say the thing that really comes to mind is, so I went to high school in Germany, and, you know, living in Germany, it's easy to get over to other places in Europe. So we had probably the teacher that maybe had the biggest effect on my life, my high school drama teacher. Her name is Dr. Jo Riley, and she's a genius. And like, we were so lucky to have her in high school. She had us reading Sarah Kane, like in high school. And if you know anything about Sarah Kane, you know, that's some wild stuff. Yeah. So she would take us on trips to London and go see shows at the National Theater and on the West End as part of our theater class. And I remember going to see Fiona Shaw do Mother Courage at the National Theater. And I didn't really, you know, Brecht can be a little obtuse sometimes. And some of the play went over my head, but her performance was so undeniable and powerful that I just became sort of deeply inspired. So, you know, my hope was like, wow, if I could ever be on stage like that, like if I could do something close to what she's doing, I know that would be really important to me in my life. And so that would be my Ring of Keys moment.
Oh my God, what an incredible moment. And you probably knew who she was from like Harry Potter, right? Like that was the extent of that. And then you're like, wait, you can do it all.
Fiona Shaw, I feel like I most recently saw her in Killing Eve. She was so fun on that TV show. She was great.
I missed that one, but I mean, she's one of the goats. Like,
yeah,
totally.
For sure.
Gabby, are you multilingual then if you went to high school in Germany?
I have okay German. I used to have pretty good German because of living there for so long. But then when I came back to New York, I essentially didn't speak any German for like 5 years. And so I've been trying to pick it up. Like I have a goal to go to the Goethe Institute and just like do 6 months of instruction and just get it back up. But I will say I was in Berlin for pretty much all of August last year and I got around. I was fine. I was able to speak. So I have enough to like not be an ignorant person just yelling English. Not that anything's wrong with that, but.
So as like an army brat, where would you say, like, would you say Germany was like home growing up, or did you have like some other home base that you considered to be?
Kind of. I mean, it's sort of like between Germany and Northern Virginia because my parents live there now and my brother lives there now. My dad worked at the Pentagon like for a portion of my childhood, but I did all of high school in Germany. Okay. So I still feel, it was actually funny because I hadn't been back in a really long time till last summer. And I realized like so much, there are so many parts of my personality that come from German culture that I had forgotten. And I just was like, wow, I love being in a place where everyone's on time. Like I love being in a place with a functioning social welfare infrastructure. Like,
imagine that.
Okay, this is a really random story, but I was in my apartment in Berlin and there you have to like, the recycling rules are a lot more intense. Let's just put it that way. And you will get shamed if you do not recycle properly.
Oh, wow.
And I was cleaning my like yogurt container, and I was cleaning it a lot more thoroughly than I would do in the States. And I started thinking about that. I was like, why am I doing this so much? And I was like, oh, because I believe in the systems here because they work. So I want to participate fully. Right.
That's so interesting. Oh my God.
Oh, no.
So, did you do any theater then in high school? Like, was there like a high school theater program that you were able to do theater in when you were there?
So my that teacher I told you about, she would direct a play like twice a year, usually a musical in the spring, which I would refrain from doing because I'm not like a, you know, I don't have a great belt, but I would always do the plays in the fall.
Any iconic roles that you feel were pivotal?
Hell yeah, I played the Big Bad Wolf
Oh, wow.
at one point, and I played the Big Bad Wolf as like a gospel preacher. I thought that was a bit inspired. Don't ask how it worked. It was fine. So this teacher, like I said, was a genius. She adapted the Ramayana, the Hindu like foundational religious text. She adapted that for the stage, and so I played Sita, who is the wife of God.
Oh, wow.
Those were the two that popped to mind.
Those are pretty legendary. Those are great. And then I mentioned in your bio that you use both sides of your brain because I know when you ended up seeking higher education, you double majored in what was it, theater and
Neuroscience.
neuroscience. What was your thought in going for both?
Well, now looking back on it, I can say that I think acting and neuroscience just speaks to an interest in human behavior and like why people are the way they are. But at that time, it was really more practical because my family, like in my immediate family, my close family, there's not a lot of people in the arts. And so it just seemed like a pretty irrational thing to do to like try to become a professional actor. And so I was hedging my bets basically. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna be pre-med. I'll do neuroscience, but then I'm gonna do what I really like as well. And in my senior year, I had a really like kind of a come to Jesus moment where I was kind of like, I know that if I don't fully give acting a try, I'm gonna regret it for the rest of my life. So I applied to grad school and I luckily got in for acting.
That's awesome. You ended up in grad school then after that.
Yeah.
And then when along the journey did you end up in the skin of our teeth?
Yeah. So, I mean, I had been doing off-Broadway plays for a couple years and specifically working with Liliana Blaine Cruz, who is my favorite theater director of all time and basically the reason why I have a career. And we had worked in a couple of off-Broadway shows together before that. And then she was making her Broadway debut at Lincoln Center with The Skin of Our Teeth and asked me to audition for that part. And I was like 99% sure I wasn't going to get it just because it is such a huge, iconic part. And I couldn't imagine them not casting someone with a few more credits or who was just famous, basically. But then somehow I got it. And yeah, it was like the role of a lifetime in a way.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, Connor mentioned earlier that your name was on everybody's lips at that time, and it was such an exciting moment. From what I understand, I unfortunately, as I don't live in New York, didn't get to catch that. But from what I understand, it was a very imaginative, sort of larger than life production. Looking back on that experience, what do you remember most about that time?
Well, it was a time of a lot of contradictions, right? Because this was at the height of like the Omicron variant of COVID. And so when we were rehearsing that play, we were testing regularly. We had to be masked when we weren't actively working on text. And so there was a sort of a fearful, tentative quality about being in New York at that time. But then the process itself and the kind of room that Liliana created was one of deep safety and abandon and imagination, because that's how she works, is she creates a space where you feel like your most expansive self and that there are no bad ideas. You can just sort of really push to the edges of what you feel like you can do, and she'll hold you and she'll help you curate it in a way that makes it legible to other people. So I mostly just remember feeling like the most free I've ever felt in a process, just from the trust I have with Liliana. And also that role was such a force of nature and such a larger than life kind of vibe that it's like monumental, right? Because like also the Vivian Beaumont stage that we were performing on, that's like the third biggest stage in New York. Like it's only, the only stages that are bigger than that are the Met, Opera, and Radio City Music Hall. So it's monumentally huge. And so thinking about how to fill that space with energy and meet the demands of the story meant that you had to kind of like let go of any boundaries or inhibitions and just fly.
Yeah. Was it a thrilling experience then to get nominated for a Tony?
Was it? Yeah, duh. It was crazy. Like, like I said, I didn't expect to get the part. I never even expected to be on Broadway. Like the only people who get to do straight plays on Broadway, it seems, are people who are famous nowadays. And especially to play a lead role, right? And so to get that part and to be working with someone I love and trust so completely, that would have been icing on the cake. Like, I don't need anything else. And then people start saying like, oh, you're going to get nominated for a Tony. And I was like, okay, that's your way of saying that the performance is good.
Sure.
But then to actually wake up one morning and to have like, you know, 500 text messages from like kindergarten friends I haven't spoken to in a while being like, congrats on the Tony nom. Like that was wild. It was really very special.
Congrats. Was the experience of attending the Tonys what you thought it would be like?
I didn't even know what I thought it would be like, but it was everything that and more. I mean, I remember standing, waiting to go into the press line, and I'm there with my best friend, and my manager at the time was behind me, and RuPaul sort of like floats past, and he stopped in front of me, like looked me up and down and was like, great color, and then walked on. And I was just like, well, it doesn't, you know, win or lose, like kill me now because I'll never be happier than I am in this moment. So it's like moments like that, you know, pinch me moments.
Oh, totally.
And then like, I must say, being nominated in that category with the actresses that I was nominated with was one of the greatest honors of my career. Every single woman in that category that year were people that I have looked up to my entire career. And so to just be mentioned in the same breath as them was, yeah, it's mind blowing. It's still mind blowing to me.
Oh, that's really, really special. And that's so nice to hear too. Okay, wait. So you obviously have done some incredible theater and you're still doing it now, but you've found the time to do some television for us. And Presumed Innocent, I feel like everyone watched this show. I mean, it was such a hit. I've never binged something so fast in my life.
Yay.
You were so brilliant on this show. And I have to just say your Bob was a character of its own. What was that experience like?
First of all, the Bob has a name.
Oh.
Her name is Silkiana. All my wigs are sisters. So there's Silkiana, there's Waviana, there's Curliana. And so she's part of an illustrious legacy.
Obsessed.
Shout out to Silkiana. It was like such a crazy thing to be part of that. I mean, that was probably my biggest TV role to date. And I'm really just very impressed with how they put the show together. I watched the screener and obviously I know how it yeah. ended and stuff. And I just was watching it with my friend and we were both like on the edge of our seats. And I'm like, that's crazy. Like, I know everything that's about to happen and I'm still feeling suspense. Like, David E. Kelly, you're very good at what you do.
Genius. Some of the best TV shows ever. I mean, seriously. That's so cool. I'm happy for you. Do you like the format of working on television?
Yeah. I mean, I really like the sort of the size of the performance on screen. You can do really, really subtle work. And as someone who's done so much theater, I find that to be a really fun challenge. And I will say, like, with something like Presumed Innocent, the cast was so incredible. I mean, many of my favorite actors, like I was nominated for a Tony with Ruth in 2022, then to be able to act with her on the show and to kind of get to know her and we're cool now, like it was wild. So like, that's another cool thing about TV and film and specifically Presumed Innocent was being across people who are masters of their craft and just watching how they approach a scene, watching how they change take to take. You know, there's this one shot, sort of oneer in the show where Peter Sarsgaard gives his, I believe, I can't remember if it's his opening statements or his closing statements. And watching him do that was like watching someone do theater. And it was, he's just so brilliant. And Bill Camp, Elizabeth Marvel, obviously Jake Gyll. So many incredible actors on that show.
Oh, yeah. And Gabby Beans, but of course.
What kind of TV shows do you like to watch? Do you watch a lot of TV or movies?
So I go through phases. Like right now, honestly, I'm watching Cowboy Bebop, the anime.
Fun. I binged all of that maybe right before COVID.
Yeah, I love it. It's so good. I'm also watching Great British Baking Show because sometimes you just need comfort.
Of course.
But
it's so soothing.
I really like limited series. Like probably my favorite limited series of all time is Station 11. Like I loved that.
My friend Spencer was just telling me he's obsessed with Station 11. Shout out to Spencer. He listens to the pod.
Shout out, Spencer.
I did not take it in because it came out right when COVID did, and the plots were like, the plot was eerily similar to what was happening in the world, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
It would have been potentially triggering at that time, but I would really recommend it. I like stuff with like really good world building and great ensemble casts. And so I really enjoyed that. I'm trying to think like, what else have I been watching? I know I have been watching stuff, but those are the things that pop to mind.
Yeah. You're busy.
What is your routine sort of like? Obviously your job is mostly in the evenings, except for on two show days. Do you have to like constantly just be taking care of your voice and staying in show ready mode?
Totally. I mean, I think especially with this kind of show, it's like really demanding. So I love how that organizes my life because I basically can just weigh everything like, will I be able to do the show the way I want to do it if I do this or not? And so that's the decision-making process. I'm really into fitness. So I love to like try to get a workout in the morning. And then there's other work to be done. You know, I have my own projects that I'm working on or editing or whatever. So I try to keep it pretty chill and easy during the day. And so I have a lot of energy to do the show at night.
I mean, yeah, I know that Connor mentioned in the bio that you're also a filmmaker, and I have a million questions about that too, but we do want to be respectful of your time. We are sadly coming to the end of our chat today, but we like to kind of leave the listeners with a dose of drama. So this, you know, I know you just recommended a bunch of TV shows. This could be something in that vein of something that you've been watching or thinking about reading. Connor, do you want to kick us off today with a dose of drama?
Yes, because believe it or not, I'm reading a book.
Everyone's shocked. Their jaws are on the floor.
I know. The only time I can really focus on reading these days is when I'm on an airplane, which I know sounds like sad because I don't even fly that much. But anyway, I've started reading the new Sally Rooney, Intermezzo. You know, I love Normal People, love Conversations with Friends. I liked Beautiful World, Where Are You? And this one is really interesting. It's two male protagonists, they're brothers that are about 10 years apart in age, and how their lives kind of like intersect and influence one another's. And they're both in quote unquote age gap relationships. So it's a very interesting dynamic about how they address each other through this and how they're both dealing with grief and the loss of their father and finding love and finding connection with one another. And I just love the way Sally writes stories. And she said that she's kind of like done putting her books, writing them with hopes that they'll be turned into like TV or film, which I think is like a very interesting, it's something very interesting for her to acknowledge, because I mean, obviously Normal People worked so well, Conversations with Friends didn't work quite as well, but you can tell that she's writing this with just like, this is a book, you can tell, you know, and if someone turns it into a show, they'd have to really swap the format up. But I love it. I recommend it for sure.
I'll definitely have to check it out. Well, it's interesting. Yeah. You know, we talk about all the time, like, can something just be one thing or does it have to be everything? Like podcasts used to just be audio. Now everyone wants video. So it's like, you know, things are constantly ever evolving, but
for sure.
I love theater is always just, you know what I mean? Like it is what it is. And sometimes it's adapted. Like I mentioned Wicked, but anyways, my dose of drama. I mean, I feel like I really cannot stop thinking about the movie Anora. It's so amazing.
So good.
Oh, I gotta see it. I wanna see it so bad.
Yeah, it's really a thrill ride. I highly, highly recommend it. I think that the performances are great and I think it's still in theaters. Hopefully it will be for a while, but
I also really, loved really the boy that
it.
Plays her boyfriend, love interest. Yes, he was so hilarious. Funny. He was so
I've seen
funny.
Some interviews with him and it seems like he's not acting.
Like, I don't think so. I don't think
there's
so.
There's a video of him talking about his audition tape for this role. Have you seen that video?
I just saw it this week. Yeah.
Look that up. I haven't even seen the movie and I'm like, I already know that this guy is the right guy for the role.
He's great.
Oh my, he talks about how he filmed it in the nude.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stop.
He's wild.
Wait,
he's
that's
wild.
So funny. I loved him. Gabby, do you have a dose of drama to send us home with?
Yes, I will give you some backstage tea.
Ooh.
And it will end with a question because there is a cast-wide rap battle going on. As anyone, if you come to see the show, you'll see that we're on stage for a while before the action of the play starts. Let's put it that way. And something that started happening is that members of our company are bringing up sheets of paper and spitting bars. And I'm not going to tell you who the best rapper is, but there is a clear number one, but I'm going to let that remain a secret.
Wow, 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 wow. Listeners, write in your guesses. We'll have to publish a poll on socials. I think my boy Taheen is probably great.
I can't say. I would leave it a secret, but
that's really fun.
But he will be if he hears this, he will be so happy to hear you say that.
Okay, my guess, and obviously Gabby, I know you can't react to this, but my guess is either Tommy Dorfman or the actor who plays Capulet, both Capulet tracks, who was like also one of my faves in the show.
Shola Fadaran.
Beyond.
Incredible, incredible actor. Once again, I cannot speculate. I cannot offer a hint, but.
So fun.
Listeners, let us know.
What if it was the Kit Connor? I mean, that would blow my mind. Okay, anyways, listen, Gabby, you are so fun.
So fun. Thank you for joining us. Like, literally.
Of course, my partner.
Even more obsessed with you now after chatting with you. Where do you want everybody to follow you online? I know you definitely have an Instagram, Gabby.beans, but are you on TikTok or Blue Sky or any of these others?
Oh my gosh. I'm pretty much just on Instagram. You can find me at Gabby.beans. If you want to see me posting esoteric memes on my stories from time to time, that's pretty much what I do on there. I do have a TikTok. I'm in a TikTok transition because I used to do like exclusively just me reviewing apples because I really like apples and I would just review various apples. But I'm like, that's for me. Like, that's not for people. That's for me. So there's not really much on my TikTok, but you can try to find me.
What's the best apple for like a Thanksgiving time snack?
Cosmic Crisp.
Okay.
I love it.
Cosmic Crisp apples are my like overall favorite apple. Like you can find them in most Whole Foods. They're really delicious. If you can find a lemonade apple, try one of those because those are delicious.
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah. Well,
okay. All right. Look, you're giving us all these amazing recommendations. And everyone, of course, needs to see Romeo and Juliet. It's playing through the end of February, I believe, at Circle in the Square Theater.
That's true. February 16th.
And there are accessible ways to get tickets. If anyone is trying to get up in the morning and rush, do what you can. It is one of those shows that I feel like people are going to remember fondly, and they're going to talk about it for a long time. So congrats to you, Gabby. And thank you so much for spending this time with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Dylan and Connor. You are wonderful people.
Oh, thank you. If everyone else thinks we're wonderful and has yet to follow us online, we're at The Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I'm at Dylan McDowell. Thank you again, Gabby and Connor. I will see you next time.
Drama.